You're listening to The Stack, first broadcast on the 15th of February 2014 on Monocle 24.
A rifle through the newsstand's latest offerings, revealing an old classic that's still charming aspiring British housewives, a brand new fashion glossy attempts to hit the retail jackpot, and we go to Vienna, where we uncover a nation obsessed with photography in print. On The Stack this week, we'll be having a maxi magazine review with two supremely qualified print industry guests, one tackling the still very vibrant glossy sector and the other delving into the weird and wonderful world of independent publishing. Plus, we head to Austria, where we discover a thriving scene in photographic journals.
We see the need and the focus, which of course is very different to other magazines on photography. So we did want to do something that's not on the market yet.
All that and plenty more besides ahead on this 77th edition of The Stack here on Monocle 24. Hello and welcome to Studio One here at Midori House for this edition of The Stack with me, Tom Edwards. Barbara Rowlands is the director of the Magazine Journalism MA at City University here in London and has worked as a writer and reporter for AFP, Women's Own, Titbits Australian Consolidated Press, London Bureau and today amongst many others. Barbara, welcome. Great to have you back with us on The Stack as always. What have you been up to? Any stars of the future that you pick out this time around?
I think so, yes. Yeah? Yes, I wouldn't like to name them, but they're a pretty talented bunch and I think they'll do pretty well.
Oh, the young and talented. Yeah. How I despise that group. We've got another Stack regular with us today. A stalwart, I think I might say. It's Steve Watson, a keen champion of the UK and global magazine scene and founder of innovative magazine distributor Stack. It's all in the name, isn't it, Steve? Which Steve started 3 years ago in an attempt to help independent publishers find a wider readership. He's also written for and edited magazines for the last 10 years. Welcome back to The Stack, Steve.
Thank you very much.
Tell me what's been happening in alternative Stack land.
Other.
All good?
The
all
other
good?
Stack. All very good, thanks. It's been a really strong start to the year. There have been some really, really interesting magazines that have come out in the last month and a little bit. And, I guess we'll talk about those a little bit later.
We will do, yeah. Just in terms of sort of prevailing trends, that sort of thing, any sort of broad things that have struck you as the years got underway? We'll obviously get into it in more detail later, but any sort of observations where you thought, maybe 2014 started out in a bit of a different shape than I was expecting?
Do you know, I'd hate to kind of go jumping the gun, but I do actually feel that there is more commercial interest in magazines, in independent magazines at the moment than certainly than I've seen for the last few years. I'm kind of being asked to more lunches and being taken for more coffees by people who have some kind of commercial interest in stuff. And that, I think, is just really positive.
Excellent. Well, that sounds like a win-win-win situation.
It would be nice, wouldn't it?
Especially if you're getting some free lunches out of it as well. Plenty of other titles to go through, plenty of other newsstand trends to discuss with Steve and Barbara as the show goes on. But we'll actually start today with a little trip to the capital of Mittel Europa. We're off to Vienna. Vienna has many associations, schnitzel, a Sachertorte, the waltz, but another one of its equally enjoyable specialities is photography. The city is a world-class centre. Photography and print have always gone hand in hand, and despite computer and phone screens getting ever brighter and clearer, photos are still eminently better to look at on the printed page. Yet the general trend for photography magazines worldwide has been to move online as publishing costs rise and traditional advertising declines. Not so in Austria, though. The Alpine nation, famed for veteran publications like Camera Austria, has seen plenty of new journals pop up in the past few years. So what is it about photography in Austria then? Our man in Vienna, Alexei Koroliev, finds out.
No, I really like the book format and the magazine format because it has, it just has a different weight and
the magazine gives you more time. It's a different attitude towards the image and the printed photograph, why should or how could it die out?
You would hardly contemplate and look more than just a few seconds on a screen. But a double page, you can just leave it open on a table and you will encounter it again and again over a certain time.
Voices from Austria's photographic community. Austrians do seem to love photography. Specialist camera shops are everywhere in Vienna, and so are photo galleries. And despite the continued global decline of the print media, so too are photography magazines. Reinhard Braun is the publisher of the renowned Kamera Austria magazine, first started in 1980 as an in-house periodical, and he's got insights into the country's photography boom.
Public fundings for artists working in the field of photography started rather early in Austria. So the ministry started in the early 80s already to support photographers. And one second reason I'm not so sure about, but maybe it might also affect this development, is that I guess the medium of photography was quite proper also as a working field. It was not that defined, it was not that arty, you know, it had its experimental possibilities. And interestingly, there are quite a lot of Austrian artists working quite experimentally and conceptually with photography.
Hannes Berg is one of them.
There is, let's say, design.
His latest work features in a trendy new photography magazine called Streulicht.
Like, my contribution to the magazine was a series of photographs that are actually part of a larger work that usually I show together with a 16mm film. But the photos, they're a series of, in a black and white reportage style of a film set in Mexico City of a telenovela. And I thought that might be probably also a very logical contribution to cinema and photography.
Streulicht is the German for stray lights, a fitting name for a publication that seeks to analyze, and I quote, all facets of photography. Roland Fischer-Briand is the editor-in-chief.
And this magazine for photography was founded in 2012, so 2 years ago, and we have 2 issues a year, and it's actually an artist-run magazine. So we develop specific topics that we think are kind of relevant right now, or have a certain appeal to us. And so the first issue was about photography and performance. The second issue was about photography and the order of things. And the third, which is like the new issue that came out recently, is about photography and the cinematic.
With a circulation of just 800, Streulicht is not much of a commercial success. But then this wasn't the idea anyway, Fischer-Briand tells me.
We see the need and the focus, which of course is very different to other magazines on photography. So we want to do, or we did want to do, something that's not on the market yet. Or we see kind of magazine culture raising in the last 5-10 years. And so this is our contribution to it.
Reinhard Braun at Kamera Austria believes that's part of a wider trend.
When you go to Paris and you have a look at the off-print, you know, there are a lot of publishers worldwide that are specialized on photography, you know, doing their very precious, very specific artist books, you know, most of them dealing with photography. There's quite a wide range of self-publishing, small publishers throughout Europe, South America.
For the artists themselves, it all really boils down to preferences. Some go digital and create their portfolios online, and some, like Jochen Lohr, stick with analog.
For me, much more interesting to have a film image because it has more secrets inside.
Lohr's latest project involves filming and photographing pyramid-like buildings around the world. His earlier work includes a film which shows sudden explosions at several locations around Vienna.
On the digital level, you always, and also on the internet, where you end up is some kind of grid. It just stops. You can't understand it, basically. You can see how much resolution is there. And you cannot do that with analog photography. If you develop it in a different way, or if you print it in a different way, or if you enlarge it in a different way, it reveals much more, and you can get a bigger stimulus for your own ideas or for your own imagination. So I think it opens up more still, although it's an old media.
For Hannes Berg, the difference between film and digital photography is less drastic.
When photography becomes digital, of course, it's suddenly much easier to transport it. And if we use the internet as the digital, then it's full of images. Yeah? I mean, it takes on a different appearance, yeah, and then probably the time aspect of it is changing, but it's probably just the nature might change slightly. But in essence, I think there's no...
But for all the sustained interest in photography in Austria, even established magazines like Kamera Austria have difficulty attracting new readers.
because we're doing it because well, we want the people to have a look at it and read it. You know, it's not about the magazine is not only about having good reproductions, because there are generations of new students evolving in the different academies and universities throughout Europe, and so there is always a next generation you have to, you know, reach and confess that there are interesting and important things to encounter.
That was Alexei Korolyov speaking to the men behind Streulicht and Camera Austria magazines out of Vienna. And I've surprised my guests on the stack today with a couple of copies. Barbara's leafing through Camera Austria. Steve had Streulicht. Barbara, I'll start with you. What do you make of Camera Austria? It's interesting, we're talking there about it can be a bit of a struggle to gain new readers. And it's certainly got quite a sort of traditional look and feel to it, doesn't
it? It's quite traditional. It's quite text-heavy. Mm. It's got some fantastic pictures in it, you know, particularly things like flocks of birds and a fly on an apple core. But the cover doesn't sell it well.
It's certainly very text heavy. It's obviously quite a kind of an academic take to the issue.
Yeah.
Steve, what about Streulicht? What did you make of that? What's the sort of instinctive first read reaction of that one?
I think it's really interesting. It seems to be a magazine that's about the stuff you can do with photography rather than being a photo mag. So, you don't get lots of big glossy images of pretty photos, but you get kind of strange overlays where they pick apart what a photo is, and then they've got these kind of tracing papery sort of sections that I think looks really interesting.
So a sort of cautious thumbs up to those two. Interesting picture of the Vienna photography scene though here on the stack. Still with me, as you will have gathered, are Barbara Rowlands and Steve Watson. Maybe we should continue and delve into your stacks of magazines today. Maybe we'll start with you, Barbara. Where shall we begin in your roundup today? What have you got for us?
Well, I've got three. I've got the newly launched Porter magazine. I've got Esquire. And the Good Housekeeping, which has been established almost 100 years. So, start with Porter. This is on the newsstand, but in fact, it's launched by Net-a-Porter, which is the online retail company. You wouldn't think it was actually basically a branded content magazine. It's got all the trademarks of a high-end glossy magazine. It's got very big names. It's global, so there aren't different editions all over the world. I think it's been launched in about sort of 60 countries. And so you have this weird mix of like the CEO of a Beijing company, you know, with an American actor, with somebody else from, you know, Mumbai or whatever.
And it's interesting because we were talking on a previous stack with some of the guys from Acne Paper and looking at this idea of these magazines that exist are supported by their brands, but often the links are fairly tenuous. It's not just a sort of a simple marketing ploy. It's a bit more subtle than that. Do you think they're quite successful, though, that sort of subgenre in pulling off that trick?
It's difficult because this is the first one. Obviously, it's called Porter, so that links up with Net-a-Porter. They do say, you know, in various things, you can... the bottom of lots of pages, it says shop Porter at Net-a-Porter. But it doesn't scream it. You can actually direct your smartphone at each page and click and get your Christian Dior £5,000 handbag sent to your home. So it's, I think with most branded content magazines now, it is fairly supple. And I also think, you know, the typography, I think with Steve and I were talking earlier, I think it might be Dido, which is used in high-end fashion magazines. It's branded as a high-end fashion magazine. And I think for the ordinary person going into a newsstand, you know, most branded content magazines aren't available there.
That would sit fairly comfortably.
Yeah.
Steve, I wonder, do you feel a sense of trepidation or a bit of caution when you learn about a project like, say, Porter magazine coming out of the Net-a-Porter stable? Or are you just happy to see more titles on the newsstand?
Certainly no trepidation. I think the quality of the mag will stand or fall on the quality of the content. And I've literally had a chance to flick through Barbara's copy through there. The thing that I'm mostly struck by is kind of how pedestrian the whole thing is. I mean, they have successfully aped all the other magazines that look like that. And I think probably the most interesting bit would be the fact that you can download the app and point your phone at the page and buy something.
They have an iPad edition, which is completely interactive. You sort of literally click on the content directly and you can buy it.
That sounds really interesting. I can imagine people doing interesting stuff with that in the future. But in terms of, you know, kind of making a mag that looks like a lot of other mags out there, sort of, it's not particularly interesting.
Now, it's intriguing, Barbara, you've got a few titles sort of in that sort of, I guess, what would we call it, maybe the traditional sort of glossies world. And we'll dip back into the stack in a minute. Steve, where do we start with your stack? It looks from afar a little different. Are we comfortably in the so what would I call it, the independent sector, where you're used to sort of operating perhaps? Where should we begin then?
Exactly. So okay, so here's a counterpoint to Porter. It's a magazine called Jashan Mal Quarterly. It's the customer magazine for Jashan Mal, which I believe is kind of the biggest, oldest shopping mall in the like sort of the Arab world and the Gulf States. It's made by Connor Purcell, who's the editor of We Are Here magazine, an independent travel magazine. And I think this is kind of, this is what I see from customer publishing, think there's something interesting going on there. So
now describe this one to us, because it's quite arresting. Bigger format.
Okay.
You know, that's going to grab you on the newsstand, isn't it? Definitely.
Exactly.
It's colourful, yeah. I think we should say.
I think it's handed out for free in their stores, and it's sent to kind of their customer mailing list. The first issue was dedicated to comic books. This second issue is dedicated to magazines. So I actually sent this out on stack in January as like a free extra magazine, because it literally is page after page of really interesting magazine people talking about what they do and why they do it. This is the sort of thing that I think, you know, kind of Jashan Mal are doing this, I presume, because they want to position themselves as an authoritative brand in this area. And they do it really, really well. They've given free rein to a couple of creative people, and that's what you get as a result.
I was going
to
say, it's interesting you say free rein, because it's very, very sort of designed. It's pretty arresting. I like the look of it. There's plenty going on. Huge variety in terms of fonts and copy and big full bleed images, just black pages of block colour. What's your first response, Barbara? It seemed pretty enthusiastic to just.
Yes, I think it's just very joyful. I just love the palette of all these, this mash of colours. And also, you've got some really quite big names, you know, big designers, you know, David McKendrick, you know, the creative director of Squire. You've got Merripin Mills from The Guardian. You know, it's just really looks something I want to sit down and take away with me and read.
Yeah, absolutely.
But it is joyful. I mean, a lot of these magazines I've got have got all these spring colours, which is bliss, you know, getting away from the rain. But it just looks a lovely, as I said, mash of colour and design and good, you know, good writing.
Mm. Let's pick up then in your stack, because we mentioned these sort of established glossies. And it's interesting, I suppose, when you see a magazine like that's doing something incredibly bold, very striking, sort of arresting almost. You have to sort of stop and almost take a double take. If we continue with your stack, the glossies, they kind of know their market,
they know their
formula. Are they a little too timid, perhaps? Could they be a bit bolder? Could they learn from some of these?
I certainly think Porter could be a bit bolder. I mean, these are all very different, actually, because you've got Good Housekeeping and Esquire, and they're very different, but they're both very traditional in their own way. And Good Housekeeping, the Audit Bureau of Circulations figures came out yesterday, and Good Housekeeping is inched in its print edition, you know, ahead of Glamour. And it's a very old title. I think it was launched in the 1920s, you know, to help single women who were bereaved in the First World War to, you know, lead an independent life. And it just delivers for its readers. You've got a very passionate editor who every month delivers for its readers in terms of health and the home. And it's all about the home and the family. But at the same time, it's actually, it seems to me, reading this is, it's quite feminist. It's sort of saying, there's a lot of stuff about women saying, actually, you know, you can do this. There's features on women who have given up their jobs to do something they really want to do. Pieces about women who are actually quite happy with their bodies. It's all kind of standard stuff, but it's something that I think that women, and it's aimed at women of probably late 30s, 40s, early 50s, you know, that's what they want to hear. And, you know, it's just, I think it's quite celebratory of women, and there's an awful lot in it. And although it's the traditional stuff, it seems to be done in a fresh way.
And just on that point about, you mentioned issues like health issues, of course, Neri, you know very well. In the sort of current marketplace, there's so many specialist titles.
Yeah.
Do you think it's reassuring that there's obviously enough readers who are happy to read, you know, a little, to some degree of depth, but not in a specialist title? They can get their fill of maybe health stories they want from a title like this without going into sort of real niche market for those kind of stories.
Well, I think, I mean, a lot of health now has become well-being. It's all about guilt. You know, you should, you know, you're responsible. But in this particular issue, they've got a very good piece about, should you go for breast screening? You know, there's a big debate about it. And they've raised that, you know, should you or shouldn't you? And they've debated it in quite an intelligent way. I think the other thing about this thing is it's got this Good Housekeeping Institute where it brands products. So it's kind of people trust it, and I think that's really, really important in magazine, you know, that they trust the people who are writing the magazine, whatever it is, you know, whether it's an independent magazine or something like Good High Street, they know what the readers want, they're delivering, they're giving them actually the best. And I think that's what makes something like Good Housekeeping so successful.
Interesting idea, that thing about building up that trust with readers. Some magazines can probably do it quite quickly. In the first couple of issues, you can feel that bond. If we resume in your stack, Steve, any there that you think the readers will have that sort of very immediate affinity, even if you've only just picked up an issue for the first time?
Well, so here's an interesting one. There's a new magazine just come out called Like the Wind, which is a running magazine that seeks to do for running what kind of the Ride Journal and Ruler have done for cycling. I think it would be really interesting to see how this is received, because I think they've been quite open about saying, you know, kind of that's what we're trying to do. We've seen a market there. Let's go for it and see if we can kind of break this open. And I think that kind of any magazine that takes that more sort of spiritual approach to kind of, you know, this is what it feels to go for a run, rather than these are the six best pairs of trainers that you could like try to go for a run. I mean, you're obviously going for a much more emotional connection straight away. And I can imagine a lot of people taking to that very well.
Well, I like the look of it from my first glance. Remind me a little bit of the approach of sort of Howler, some of those football or soccer magazines, looking at it almost in a sort of aesthetic way instead of just the nuts and bolts. Barbara, what do you make of that? Are you a sort of running type? Would that one grab you? It's
not
quite
at
striking
all.
Looking, isn't it?
But I don't care. I mean, the thing is, it's like I do look at Ruler. I'm not much of a cyclist, you know. I mean, I think a lot of these things are just, they're beautiful objects and good reads.
And there's some, like we should say, lovely sort of original artwork on this as well.
Yeah.
Really
impressive
stuff.
It's a fantastic front cover of a drawing of someone's legs, you know, their calves as they go up a hill. And it's just a beautiful object. And, you know, it's something I would have around and read every so often.
The thing I like the look of the magazine. The thing that it does make me think is that, so with something like Ride Journal, you have that kind of totem on every page of the bike. And, you know, kind of whether it's someone's knackered old rusty thing or the sleekest racing machine, you have that focal point. And it's interesting that on this cover, you've just got the sort of like the back of someone's legs in sort of like in the foreground. And I guess the trainers maybe are the thing that is in the centre of the page. I wonder whether they'll struggle with not having that kind of totemic thing to focus on.
But they've got a lot of legs.
There's a lot of legs.
lots of legs.
Maybe the motif for Like the Wind will be the well-defined calf.
Exactly.
And I think we can all celebrate that. Let's delve back into the stack. So we've got a couple of minutes left to do a couple more each. Barbara, have you got one more title? Let's continue.
I've got a Squire. I'm a great fan of men's magazines. And this is the March issue, doesn't disappoint. The cover is very, you know, it's got orange. In fact, Good Housekeeping is orange with Sienna Miller on the front, and it's just a really good read. I mean, Esquire has built its reputation on good writing, you know, and you've got Will Self did a really, really interesting feature about when he went to a restaurant called Don Le Noir, where everything's dark, but it's a really good piece on beauty. You've got Tom Lamont doing a very good piece on a couple of twins who are great fans of old film stars, you know, and A.A. Gill, of course, but interweaved with all this is fun. It's, you know, it's got a touch of FHM in the culture pages where you've got lots of little bits, you know. Mm. And it's a good read, a lot of content, and in the old Esquire tradition of good writing.
Well, it's reassuring perhaps that the great writing is still often, you know, at the heart of great magazines. Mm. It's sort of not rocket science at times, isn't it? Which is a reassuring idea. Steve, let's have maybe one more of yours. I see you've got a couple to choose from. I'm going to make you choose one. Which one will you pick?
Okay, so we'll go with Acid, which is a surf magazine. This is issue 2, and the theme for this issue is engineered good times. And the thing that really kind of interested me in this, and I reviewed this on a video on the Stack site, so if anyone wants to see it in more detail, take a look there. It's a video of me flipping pages. The theme is engineered good times, and I think whereas the surf narrative is very often about kind of at oneness with nature, this one's talking about the way that man has come in and sort of like broken stuff up. So you get the kind of ultra thick wetsuits that let people go surfing in like icy seas. You get the kind of coastal defences that have inadvertently caused these new surf spots or destroyed old ones. And I think that that sort of awareness of, like, you know, man's intervention is really interesting. And also, there isn't a single golden sandy beach in there. There are, like, Norwegian snow-covered beaches, and there are, like, you know, it's a really interesting mag. And the most amazing, like,
wonderful
psychedelic colours that hurt your eyes. But,
well, it's interesting, and there's several kind of counterintuitive, as you said, not just the kind of lack of those sort of quintessentials of Hawaiian style beaches, but also it's smaller format, because you kind of think, to capture the excitement and the majesty, you need, you know, massive full bleed images. But it's a bit different. It's small format, but it doesn't seem to suffer for it. And as you said, incredible colours as well. Barbara, first response. Maybe you said you may not take to the roads with your sneakers on. Might you take to the waves now with this
No,
one?
But I mean, I've got a nephew who's a great surfer, so I mean, I know about surfing, and I've seen a lot of the kind of glossy magazines on it. So this is fantastic, and I just love the images. And they will use images from one page and use them in another in a different way. It looks a terrific read, and is an unusual way. It's not just pictures of people shooting down waves. There's lots of different kind of images about the life of a surfer.
Terrific. Well, we had a wonderful tour through your respective stacks of magazines. Thank you very much, as always, for coming in and sharing your insights and your excitement at these great new titles with us here on the programme. But that is, unfortunately, we have time for on edition 77 of The Stack. Special thanks then to Barbara Rowlands and to Steve Watson. Our producer was David Pleasant. Behind the glass here at Midori House was our studio manager, Claire Urban. As always, if you have any comments, queries, observations, criticisms — there can't have been any of those — do drop us a note. info@monocle.com is the email for that. And remember, we'll return next Saturday at the same time. You can listen again at monocle.com via iTunes or on SoundCloud. But for now, until the next edition of The Stack, it's goodbye from me.